You can get the latest odds, offers and more great content at williamhill.com, on the William Hill app and in any of our shops around the UK.
This is the William Hill Golf Podcast. Go to news.williamhill.com for all the podcasts or search William Hill Radio on iTunes.
Hello everyone, a very happy new year to you. Dave Kellner and Dave Tindall back with you in 2018 to look ahead to this week's tournament, and we're going to spin you through the four major championships ahead of the new year of golf as well. First of all, a warm welcome to the man sitting alongside me here in the studio. It's good to see you again, Dave Tindall.
Hello Dave, yes, very happy to be here, exciting for the new year. It's always, although the seasons have started in America, it always feels like this is the starting point for me.
Of course it is. Yeah. Of course it is. Don't be silly with that wraparound season nonsense.
2018, here we go.
We've got the Tournament of Champions this week, which is the traditional curtain raiser for the new year as well.
Tick.
High class field.
Bingo.
Tick. Curtain raiser's done. And Jordan Spieth is the 5-1 favourite here with William Hill. Justin Thomas is 6-1. Dustin Johnson and Ricky Fowler are both 7-1. Hideki Matsuyama 11-1. Brooks Koepka and John Rahm both 12-1. 20-1 Mark Leishman and Patrick Cantlay. And it's bigger the remainder. And given that invites are only dished out to those who won on the PGA Tour the previous year or season or whatever, the field strength is high, which makes it always an intriguing event to assess and to bet on.
It does as well. And of your Cameron Smith and Jonas Blixt, you're thinking, how have I got into this event? But there you go. They won a pairs event, and that's considered good enough to get in. But as you say, just about everyone who's everyone is there who we expected to be. No Rory, because he didn't win, although he never normally bothers anyway. No Sergio. Wouldn't it have been nice to have seen Sergio, the Masters champ, there? I think there's only a couple of Europeans, isn't it? But one of them is John Rahm, to be fair.
Yes, who is high class. The other two that qualified but have failed to take up their invitation are Justin Rose and Henrik Stenson.
Yeah.
Those are the other two Europeans that aren't in action this week. That brings us on to the venue, I suppose. There's continuity as far as the venue is concerned as well, which is nice for punters. Kapalua is the host for the 20th time, having first picked up the baton for this event back in 1999, and the course plays to a par of 73. That's not the only unique thing about this course, though. The fairways are incredibly wide, the greens incredibly large, and scoring can be obscenely low at this venue as well, Dave.
Yeah, I remember one year when Ernie Els put new clubs in the bag and came out to this and shot 30-odd under. So, yeah, sometimes you think, oh, they've only shot 70, but even that's 3-under. So the par of 73 does give scope for these really low scores. And, yeah, you can see really, really low numbers on this course. So you've got to be at it straight away, really, on the birdie count. Not that many eagles, though.
No, because the par fives are quite long, aren't
yes,
they?
Yes, even though you will see players... You'll see, like, Matt Kuchar drive it 411 yards and you think, am I still drinking at Christmas? What's going on? But it's obviously the huge kicks and runs that they get on these sloping fairways.
How have you attacked this event?
Fairly traditionally. Players who are good in the wind, who play well by the coast, who are creative around the greens, that kind of thing. I think that's always the ones to look at, because especially the par fives, you're not going to reach them in two very often. So it's those little crafty runs, because you've got to be aiming way away from the flag and just let it curve round a lot of the time. So it is players who like to not just play target golf.
Imagination needed around Kapalua. And the last first timer to win was Daniel Chopra. That was back in 2008. So course form well worth a look at Kapalua as well. I've got one pick.
I've got two.
You lead us away then. Start the new year with a bang.
Yeah, not a very exciting pick in terms of it's only 7-1, but Ricky Fowler. I mean, I know you think he's going to have a huge year.
Yep.
I do as well, and I think this is what a way to start. This is going to be it. He's played well here before, 5th and 6th, and I just think the way he finished 2017, won that event in the Bahamas, which has a few links to this, isn't it? It was windy and by the sea, a limited field event. The way he won that with a 61 to close with, and he'd come back out and finish runner-up in the Mexican event. So I just think he's finished 2017 on a high. Forget the turn of the year. He's just in great form. He's going to roll on. and be a massive factor this week, because it's everything he should like, isn't it? It's windy, you need to be creative, you need to hole a lot of putts, I think, as well. And he's got that kind of putting stroke where he just hovers it. He never looks like he's going to miss, does he? I mean,
I remember a few years ago, 5 or 6 years ago, people were questioning whether or not Ricky Fowler was a good putter. Yeah. I can remember that because his stats were so... they were so poor.
Yeah.
I can't remember what year it was. It was the late noughties, I suppose, 2012-13, something like that, when he first came out on tour. But there was never any doubt that he was a quality putter. He's so aggressive, isn't he?
Oh, he just slams him into the back of the hole, doesn't he? And he's just... I mean, statistically, he's a better putter than Jordan Spieth by about 40 spots last year. Mm. I know Spieth can sort of do it when he absolutely has to, but a Fowler, he's just one you want to be on when birdies are needed, because he's just going to keep rolling in these 6 foot, 7 footers, and he's absolutely flowing with confidence. It's one of these things... he doesn't win as much as he should, but it's only because he puts himself in contention a lot and doesn't win. It's like, I don't know, I was thinking of this in another sport the other week, where sometimes the player who's never in contention but wins when he does gets more kudos than the one who's always there but doesn't win as many times.
Yeah.
So I think Fowler, I mean, yeah, he's won the Players' Championship. He's won enough times.
Oh, yeah, and he won the Hero World Challenge, didn't he? Like you said, at the back end of the year. So Ricky Fowler at 7-1. I actually fancy Jordan Spieth this week.
Yeah, well, it's hard to... but 5-1,
yeah, he's been clipped in. He's been clipped in from 6-1. I had him pegged down as my each-way standout at 6-1.
Yeah.
5-1, you're losing that bit of juice, because he should probably be, in my mind, a 9-2, 5-1 shot anyway.
Yeah.
So I'm going to reduce stake. I would have had a couple of points each way on him at 6-1. I'm just going to take a point each way on Jordan Spieth at 5-1 to start the season. I think he's the most obvious bet in this championship.
Mm-hmm.
He's played here 3 times, finished 2nd on debut when Zach Johnson beat him, won second time out, recorded 30 under par a couple of seasons ago, and then finished tied 3rd, and came from a mile back to finish tied 3rd last year in this event. And 2 of the last 4 winners are Open champions, which seems to fit as well, given these greens are very slow, expected to run at just 10 on the stimp meter, which is very slow by PGA Tour standards. And the wind being a factor again makes you think about open conditions, as does the uneven lies on fairways you get at Kapalua as well. And last year, Jordan Spieth led the tour in strokes gained approach, which I think is absolutely key around this venue, given the vastness of these greens. And I think he's going to be one of those guys that comes into this year highly motivated. He's seen what Justin Thomas has done at the back end of last year. He's a very close friend, and there's no animosity between the two at all, because they are such good friends, but he'll be envious of the way Justin Thomas finished that season. And having not won since the Open Championship, he'll be, I think, really raring to go at the start of the season. And some of these players, you don't know if they're going to be bang up for it. At least with Spieth, you know, he targets this tournament.
Mm-hmm.
First time up, you know he can play here, and he's not going to have to shake off rust, in my opinion. So 5-1 Jordan Spieth, unoriginal, but I think he's going to contend and possibly win this week.
Yeah, I mean, if this was a 4-man podcast, or it could be 2 ladies here as well with us, Dave, you could pick any of the top 4, couldn't you? You could be 1 each. Someone
yes.
could have Justin Thomas, someone could have Dustin Johnson. You could have both form winners of the event. But I just think you've got to pick out one of the four.
The two we've gone for are the most solid of the top 4 in the market.
I think so, because I think with Fowler as well, you've said about playing well in Opens where the greens are slower, and so he's got a great record in the Open. Then again, you could argue Dustin Johnson should have won an Open. Mm. Maybe that puts him a little bit ahead of Thomas in my book this week. I think the stuff I've read on Thomas, he maybe wants to just kick back a little bit and soak it up rather than coming out absolutely 100%.
Yeah.
So I think we might see the best of Justin Thomas a bit down the line, maybe not this week.
Second pick.
Very similar reasons in the fact that you're talking about Open champion, someone who plays well in the Open. Mark Leishman at 20-1.
Yeah, I've got him as my just written down here as my second selection. If I was to have a second selection, I'm not going to.
The last 4 years in the Open Championship, he's got 2nd, 5th, and 6th. So plays that tournament brilliantly well. He's played that in some brutal wins, and he's just really kicked on. I got a table the other day of players most improved on the world rankings list, or who accumulated most points. He was one of them. And he's just a really, really top player. Won two big events last year. Won the Arnold Palmer Invitational, always a good field. Won the BMW, which was leg three of the FedEx Cup playoffs. Limited field event, if you want to take that thing angle. He's also won the Nedbank, which was limited field. So I think he's just one of those. You look at, around at some of the players when you start getting into the 20s to 30s, he's one who knows he can take on the absolute best players, all of who are here, all, a lot of whom are here this week, and beat them.
He's underrated.
He is, isn't he, basically?
Yeah.
He's just underrated. I don't know. Maybe people just didn't see that improvement in him. They just sort of tagged him down as, oh, he's quite good, but he's never going to... But it is. He's really kicked on an awful lot, Mark Leishman. And when I first started, I don't know when you first started watching this event, but when I used to watch it back in the day, well, not that long ago, but Aussies used to win all the time. You had Stuart Appleby three times in a row, Jeff Ogilvy twice.
It's reminiscent of some of those Sandbelt courses, isn't it?
There's that, plus the fact that their big events are played at the back end of the year.
That's a good point.
And Leishman played in the Aussie PGA, was fourth.
Yeah.
So they're often, you know, they're often more warmed up than some of the other ones. So that's another fact. It's why I like Fowler as well, because he played, he won the Hero Challenge, World Challenge in December.
Yeah.
So the ones, I'm just a bit wary of the ones who've sort of downed clubs in October. But Leishman, I can't see a weakness there at all at 20-1. I think he's got everything in his favour.
Any others you want to mention before we move on to the majors?
Kevin Kistner, I thought he's played well on his one go here. Was second at halfway, finished the season strongly. Pat Perez was third last year. He had a great year, didn't he, last year?
Yeah. 28s and 30-1 respectively, those two.
And Brian Harman finished last year really well. He's 28s.
Yeah.
So there's a few around there, but no one. I was looking at the, if you look at the winner, the prices of the winners, you're not getting many shocks. I think Chopra stands out a mile. The rest are all 25-1 or less.
That's the Century Tournament of Champions, which begins on Thursday. Do check out the betting on the William Hill website. We're going to talk major championship golf now, with a quick spin through the four majors ahead of the new golfing year. And we'll start with the Masters, which sees 7-1 co-favourites of three here with William Hill. Dustin Johnson, Jordan Spieth and Rory McIlroy all 7-1. Hideki Matsuyama and Justin Thomas both 12-1. Jason Day is 14s. Ricky Fowler 16-1. John Rahm and Justin Rose are both 20s. And it's 25-1 and bigger the rest. I think when you're looking at these events generally, you kind of, I want a juicy prize when I'm doing an anti-post bet personally. So I've tended in this little preview to navigate away from the market leaders, but come actual Masters time in April, things might have changed considerably.
Yeah, I mean, how are we going to do this? Am I going to lead off a little bit?
Yeah, you lead us off, because I've just picked out one player that I think's worth keeping an eye on at a price for each of the major championships. So I've gone kind of left field to a certain extent.
Right.
But obviously, we'll talk a little bit about the courses used as well. The Masters, Augusta National, needs no introduction. We know what type of player we need. One that scores well on the par fives. One that likes putting on fast greens and has solid wedge game. I think that's obviously key to Augusta. Listeners to this podcast will know all about that venue.
Yeah. The one I like, and I know he's at near the top end of the market, but I think he could go off a fair bit shorter, is Ricky Fowler at 16s.
Okay.
I think if he has a big start to the season, so maybe, obviously he's going to win this week, and then he wins maybe in Florida, he could go off 11s or 12s, because he's someone who is always popular in the market, so we will duck him, won't we? If he's playing well, you know, fine, well, that 16s is going to be long gone.
Yep.
So I don't think it's the worst thing in the world to take some of that 16s right now.
Okay,
I can only see him having a fast start to the season.
You know why I like a massive price here?
Go on.
Charlie Hoffman at 125-1.
As well as round one leader, obviously.
As well as round one leader. I mean, I think he's been second after round one in two of the last 4 years, or second and first in round one, two of the last 4 years. But he's gone into the final round of the opening major championship in fourth place two of the last 4 years as well. And I think 125-1,
It's a crazy
with
price,
six
really.
Places on offer, yeah. is a very, very big price, and he really stands out from that, you know, from that group of players at 125s. Augusta's just a place that plays into his hands because taking advantage of the par fives is crucial, and that's what he does well. Loves putting on fast greens as well, Charlie Hoffman. Anyone that follows the game will know that this man has trouble getting his head in front, doesn't he, Hoffman?
Yeah.
But did win in Texas a couple of years ago, and he's coming into this season on the back of his best ever 12 months. He's now ranked 22nd in the world. 125-1, I think, is an insult for someone who plays so well at Augusta.
Yeah, I suppose the trade-off is that right now, the each-way terms... well, we are six places, to be fair.
It's okay, isn't it? Six places.
Yeah. I was going to say you'd probably get better than an extra place or two, maybe nearer the time, but maybe at a shorter price. So.
Yeah, I don't think you'll get eight places on the Masters, but it would be nice if you did.
Yeah.
I think there'll be some price enhancements from the guys at the top of the betting, definitely, come game time in April. But if you're looking for a punt now, 125-1 with six places on offer, I think it's a bit insulting to Charlie Hoffman.
Yeah, the other one, and we've just talked about him, for a little while, is Mark Leishman at 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, again, that's why. Why is he 50s? I don't quite get it. He's played some big golf at Augusta.
I suppose because there's a few miscuts littered in there, isn't there, in his record?
There is that, yeah, but the fact that he has got a good one in the bank shows he can play the course well. You often see... I'm quite sure why. Players who play well in the Opens have a sort of matching a really good Augusta record as well. And so he's got all the elements, I think, to go well. I think 50s is definitely a big price on him.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think the one great thing about Leishman is ball flight around Augusta. I've mentioned it on this podcast before. He hits his irons so high that when the greens aren't as receptive, if there's been little weather... beforehand, those fast greens, he can get the ball to stop and land quickly. So
yeah, and he can scramble well, he can putt well.
I think 50 is fair on him.
I mean, he's twice the price of Tiger Woods. I mean, I know we've seen Tiger come back and do well, but what do we think of that price, 25s?
Oh, we wouldn't be taking it now, would we? I'd want to see maybe a tournament victory or a couple of very impressive performances before you even contemplated backing Tiger Woods at 25-1.
Yeah, I agree.
Shall we move on?
Yeah.
US Open is the second major. Dustin Johnson 8-1, 12-1 Jordan Spieth. Rory McIlroy is 12-1, Jason Day is 14s. Hideki Matsuyama 16-1 along with Justin Thomas. John Rahm is 20s along with Ricky Fowler, and it's 25-1 and bigger the rest. I think this could be the toughest major to analyse, this one, because the USGA have decided to return to Shinnecock Hills for the first time in 14 years. I think most people will remember, if you're old enough, remember the 2004 edition.
I certainly am, yes.
When Retief Goosen prevailed from Phil Mickelson after Mickelson made a mess of the 17th on Sunday and Goosen stepped in. But it was more down to the setup of the golf course, the wind and the sun baked the greens on that Sunday, and it compromised the entire championship. The greens were ridiculous, weren't they? Incredibly fast, and the balls were rolling, oscillating on the greens or whatever, and the USGA got heavily criticised on the back of that, and maybe that's why it's taken them so long to return to Shinnecock.
Yeah, I can say that, although it was fought out between Goosen, and I do remember because I was on him that year at 40s.
Oh, were you really?
Yeah, so, surprisingly, because I've always wanted...
That's the worst after timing on this podcast,
isn't it?
I think, yeah.
14 years after time. there's proof somewhere on the internet.
Yeah, well, I'll find that.
Possibly. Probably not. So I do remember that tournament really well because, obviously, I was on Goosen and Mickelson. I always want to win that tournament, although obviously not that year. The thing about Goosen, you say it was a slightly freaky year, but obviously Goosen had won it before,
yes.
So he was winning for the second time, and Mickelson's, six-time runner-up? So you got two sort of specialists to emerge. So I think a lot of that was down to kind of their temperament. You think of two of the most kind of people who don't get fazed by bogeys in the world at that time. It was those two.
You know what? I think that's interesting you mention that, because you look at this golf course, some of the US Open tracks can measure over 7,600 yards. This one measures around about or less than 7,000 yards. It strikes me as a... I don't remember that championship at all, Dave.
Well, how old were you? Three.
I was 15, 16, something like that.
What's the matter with you?
Yeah, I just can't remember it at all.
You're not into golf then?
I wasn't as into golf. I played a lot of golf, but didn't watch much back then. Watched a little bit, but I can't remember this particular... The only reason I remember this championship...
You were with a girl, weren't you?
I've looked back at the championship. And that... Then you get a few memories about the greens and so on and so forth. But it does strike me as a real thinking man's golf course.
Yeah.
You look at the leaderboard from 2004, Fred Funk, Corey Pavin, Mike Weir, Steve Flesch at the top of the board, which suggests to me that it might favour that type of player. You know, someone that doesn't knock the ball 350 yards off the tee. It might include everyone this championship, which will be... unusual for you at a US Open.
Yeah, no, I agree. But I always think a huge thing in the US Open is if you're a bit of a dude and a cool dude and you don't get flustered.
Well, I've picked the least cool dude out on tour.
You haven't picked Patrick Reed, have you, or somebody?
No, I've not.
Spieth?
What do you mean by cool dude?
Just someone with a really sort of horizontal, laid-back demeanour.
Oh, right. Okay, I thought you meant cool dude.
You don't have to go surfing or anything.
I've misinterpreted what you meant by cool dude. I've picked the coolest dude on tour then in that case.
Who's that then?
Matt Kuchar.
He's the guy that I fancy for this. He fits the bill as someone who's just flatlined on the course. He's not a lot of... Hey! You know, he's not going mad when he makes birdie, or he's not down in the dumps when he gets a bogey. Just look at so many winners. Goosen was one. I think Brooks Koepka's got a big chance this week. Look at how cool he is on the course.
Yep. Defending champion.
Yeah. I think that's a big old price on him, 33s.
Yeah.
Even though immediately you don't think, oh, well, that's maybe not his course. It's just the style of and your temperament that you need to have under control.
The reason I like Kuchar is because he's a bit of a steady Eddie around this golf course. And given it is so short, it plays into his hands somewhat and he won't be overawed by the layout at Shinnecock Hills. And I just think 66s is fair for a guy with such a consistent profile. He's finished top 20 in three of the last four US Opens. And that runner-up finish in the Open Championship last season, that could be a watershed moment for him. I know he didn't win the championship, but maybe he'll have the belief now he can win one. And I thought 66 was fine.
Shall I give you a good stat for the players we've just talked about? In the majors last year, in relation to par, the best player was Koepka, minus 21. Second best, Kuchar and Matsuyama, minus 20.
Oh, I like that.
Fourth best, Fowler, minus 16. We've meant that all these are coming up.
Yep.
Eighth best, Mark Leishman. So these were the guys who made the cut in all four and obviously played really well. Spieth was there. Spieth's got a ludicrous record in the majors the last 3 years. I think he's something like 61 under for the last 3 years.
Which is ridiculous.
Yeah, he was fifth last year. So I know you can pinpoint them, but I personally think Koepka is overpriced for every major. I think he, on his record in those events, he needs to be shunted nearer the front end of the market. So you're getting 33s here, you're getting bigger price. I think this is the biggest price here. It's probably because they're thinking it's not his course, maybe. But you get even the 25s for the other majors, absolutely. I worked out a stat since the 2014 US Open, no players had more top 25s in majors than Koepka. So he just, and you see his interviews, nice. He just says, oh, I sort of try harder, which is all very well, and I'm sure everyone kind of wants to do that, but he's able to do that and keep calm without sort of overdoing it.
Yep.
Back to this idea of just being chilled out.
I like it a lot. Brooks Koepka at 33-1. Any others you want to mention before we move on to the Open Championship in that particular market US?
I had Kuchar down. I think Kevin Kister might go well.
Yeah?
He
I can see that.
He's got good game for a US Open, and maybe this is a better US Open course for him than some of the longer ones.
Definitely 50-1.
Yeah, played well in the majors as well. Bill Haas. Who's everyone's written off as he can't play very well in the majors, and he's just starting to creep up a little bit. So if he has
done better recently,
he'd need to show
25 seasons.
Yeah, he's just someone who could run into like fifth.
Yeah,
that's my thinking at the minute.
Okay, let's talk about the Open Championship, where Jordan Spieth will defend. He's 9-1. Dustin Johnson 10-1. Rory McIlroy 10-1. John Rahm, Ricky Fowler, both 14s. Hideki Matsuyama and Justin Thomas, both 16-1. And it's 20-1 and bigger the rest. This should be fun. This is about the golf course as well, more than the championship. It will be interesting to see how Carnoustie, the host venue, for this stacks up this year, because there's a feeling that the majority of the courses on the Open roster have become old and tired, given the advances in technology. But I think Carnoustie, also known as Carnasty, is still viewed as a beast that takes some taming. So it'll be interesting 11 years on from Padraig Harrington's win in the Open Championship at Carnoustie in 2007, whether these players can take this place apart as well.
Yeah, I don't think they'll take it apart, but it had been off the Open rota for a lot of years until it came back in 1999 when Paul Laurie won, and I don't think they quite knew what to do with it. I think they were a bit fearful that, ooh, it was being, I think it was 1975, I think Nicholas won there maybe. It had been, so they went too extreme with the rough, and the winning score was, I think, plus six, wasn't it? Got into that playoff with Van der Velde, Justin Leonard and Paul Laurie.
Yeah.
So that was just silly. So I think when it came back in 2007, they got it right. It's got its own defences without having to sort of trick it up. And you got Padraig Harrington and you got Sergio Garcia fighting it out down the finish. So I think it'll be similar to that kind of scoreline, maybe low single digits under par.
That would be nice.
Yeah, I think that's a good 8 or 9 and 7, 8, 9 under. That would be a good proper test, wouldn't it?
Definitely. I had one man in mind for this, but yeah, we've ducked him in the market, and I like Tommy Fleetwood
for
this.
Yeah, I do, but I mean, look at that.
He's 25-1, yeah, isn't he? You see, I was checking Odds Checker out, and it's not updated on Odds Checker for some reason, and it was still showing 50-1 on Tommy Fleetwood, and yeah, I was like, I'll have a bit of that, but 25-1 is just too tight for him.
Yeah.
It's sort of the price that people were clambering over other people to get on for last year's at Royal Birkdale, because that was his home course. But had that 63 in the Alfred Dunhill Links in October at Carnoustie, which
course
was the tournament record.
Yeah, course record.
And he'll be interesting, I think, at Carnoustie, but 25-1 is just too short, isn't it?
No, I'm on him at 50s.
Are you?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
You've
snaffed a bit of value.
Yeah,
now.
I did a piece for Golf 365. Where I just looked at players' records at Carnoustie using the Alfred Dunhill, and he stood out a mile.
Yeah.
Tommy Fleetwood, as did Tyrrell Hatton. We know Tyrrell Hatton's won the Alfred Dunhill the last 2 years, but he's got brilliant scores at Carnoustie.
Yeah.
So he's more palatable, isn't he, at 40s, I think, even though I'd prefer 50s, obviously.
Yeah, I just think 40s is still a little bit tight for someone without a major championship pedigree yet.
Well, that's a bit harsh, because he's come 5th and 10th in the last two.
Yeah.
Or was that last year or the year before? He's got a 5th and a 10th, hasn't he, in major championships, Tyrrell Hatton. So I think he's interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah, 40s, he just seems more of a 50s, doesn't he, to me?
I tell you who I like at a triple figure price.
Oh, here we go. Yeah.
Zach Johnson is overpriced at 100-1. I just think that he's being disrespected at that price. Maybe he's slightly unfashionable, but if he discovered his form at the back end of last season, Zach Johnson, under the radar slightly, and he just relishes Open Championship
does, yeah,
conditions, loves it. 9th, 6th, 47th, 1st, 12th and 14th in his last six, and actually finished a respectable 20th at Carnoustie in 2007.
That was
his first made cut in an Open,
yeah,
at his fourth attempt as well. Whether he's got another major in him at age 41 remains to be seen, but he'll definitely have his eye on a Ryder Cup spot, mm-hmm, I think, Zach Johnson. He'll be highly motivated going into the season, and I think at 100-1, you can pay to find out.
Yeah, that's certainly a good price. I like that little thing. I didn't know he played quite well in 2007
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
So I always like that. I think if they've had one a little bit in the past.
And I think when it came on the back of those string of missed cuts in the Open as well, maybe just finally realising how to get a handle on conditions.
I remember watching,
I thought he was overpriced.
I remember watching Zach Johnson the practice round once at Open years ago, and I heard him say to his caddy, I think I've cracked it now. And I sort of made a mental note, but I never acted on it. But I just remember that little moment that he thought he was now knew what to do in an Open.
It's
If it was at Carnoustie.
The irony of him winning at St Andrews when he said that was the only one that he couldn't
win. Weird, isn't it? Yeah.
Just strange.
But you could certainly say if he can win there, then he could win at a more suitable one.
Oh, definitely. And yeah,
I think challenge at least.
Definitely, given he's returned to form at the back end of last season. You sometimes get this, not as much now as you did maybe 5 or 6 years ago, but the Americans were often overpriced, weren't they, for the Open Championship? But I'm not sure that's the case anymore.
No, yeah, but he, that is a weird price on someone who's still...
He's still got it, hasn't he?
You don't think for a minute he's fading, you just think he fluctuates his form a little bit, but there's no reason why, if he's playing well at the time, you know, he'd probably come second in the John Deere the week before and then come over, so yeah.
I think he's one of those that if he's playing okay come Open Championship time, he won't be 100-1 to win the event. Any others you want to mention just before we move on?
Just the same, Koepka at 25s again, Fowler at 14, so that's probably his shortest price in any of the majors. Don't see why he doesn't go well.
This was the one that I always thought I know he's going to break his duck at some point in majors. He's not going to go throughout his career without winning a major championship. This was the one that I had pinpointed for Ricky Fowler, an Open Championship. It was that year he played incredibly well in the waterproofs and the wind. I can't remember. I think it was maybe the year Darren Clark.
At Sandwich, 2011. Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
on that Saturday,
Saturday was awesome, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Absolutely awesome. Ricky Fowler, 14-1. Should we get stuck into the last one?
Yeah, just final note on the... We can segue in, but Rory McIlroy, 10-1 to win at Carnoustie, and he was the low amateur when he first played in an Open at Carnoustie.
Oh, right.
You remember that one?
That was 07 then.
Yeah. Do you remember? How was your golf?
I remember Padraig Harrington winning. I don't remember Rory McIlroy being
the way
amateur.
He was all sort of chubby and it was this young kid and he played really well for a while and made the cut.
Yeah.
And he was 10-1 to do it.
Is that the one you'd have on your mind most for Rory McIlroy then? Because a lot of people expecting a huge season from Rory McIlroy.
I think the last two I'd favour him in. Augusta still gets in his head. The US Open one, I think there are better US Open courses for him than Shinnecock.
Yeah,
but he can go well here and he always seems to play well in the USPGA. But an interesting one in the Open at 10-1. I saw Josh Culp's Future Fantasy website. Actually, it breaks down performance in various conditions. And this, I sort of double took when I looked at this. See, I'm still in shock. Best players in the wind since 2014. Top of that list, Rory McIlroy. And sometimes people used to say, "Oh, if it gets too windy..."
It's strange that, isn't it?
You know, he can't cope, but he clearly can. And it's not... And if you think about it, how well he's played in recent Opens when it's been windy as well, I think he's changed that around now.
Okay. McIlroy 10-1 for that major. His 8-1 joint favourite with Jordan Spieth for the final major of the season, the USPGA Championship. Dustin Johnson is 12-1. Hideki Matsuyama 12-1. Justin Thomas and Ricky Fowler both 16s. Jason Day and John Rahm both 20s. Brooks Koepka and Tiger Woods are both 25s, and it's 33s and bigger the rest. This is an interesting one. The USPGA has been played at Belrive Golf Club in Missouri this season. It's a Robert Trent Jones Jr. design that has been tweaked by his son Rhys Jones in recent times. Last hosted a major championship in 92 when Nick Price won. That was the first of his three majors. And it's hosted the BMW Championship since. Camilo Villegas won that in 2008. And it hosted a Senior PGA Championship in 2013. I found this the toughest one to come up with any sort of selection for, Dave.
Yeah, it's often the one maybe there's not a great deal of advantage in trying to get a bet on now, because often it just goes to someone who's won that year.
And there's so much water that's got to flow under the bridge first as well.
Yeah. When's it moving to May? Is it the year after?
I think so.
2019.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, so for now, it's a long old haul, isn't it, till August. It does seem to kind of reward players who've done a lot of winning at a good level without, like Jimmy Walker, when he won, he'd got a lot of PGA Tour wins under his belt. Justin Thomas.
We've seen a lot of first-time
Yeah,
major
good for first-time who are proven winners. So if Fowler's not won by then, 16-1, I'd be happy to have that, I have to say.
Yeah.
But beyond that, it's a little bit of guesswork. But Fowler at 16s, if I had to put a bet on now, I'd put it on him. Because if obviously he plays well in the other majors, he might go down to 12s for this.
The one that I liked was Henrik Stenson.
Always does well, doesn't he?
Yeah, 40-1. I just think that he is the autumnal golfer, isn't he, Henrik Stenson? And you look at his form in the PGA Championship: tied fourth 2008, tied sixth 2009, third 2013, tied third 2014. Last 2 years, tied seventh and tied 13th. He always seems to peak at that time of year. It took him a long time, I think, to get over the enormity of what he achieved when he won the Open Championship. Played well subsequently, the two subsequent months, but then had a real lull. Second half of last season came back, won the Wyndham Championship, played well after that as well. And I just think this is the time of year to catch Henrik Stenson.
Yeah, definitely, yeah.
So I think he might win a PGA Championship by the time he's through. And I thought 40-1 was pretty fair on Henrik Stenson, a guy with his class.
Yeah. Someone like Patrick Cantlay, if he's had a big year, he could kind of win this type of event.
Yeah, and he's not even in the betting yet, but someone like Bud Cawley, I think, would be a fit for this sort of event at the end of season, if he happens to get into it. I presume he might win an event by then and get into the PGA Championship, but he'd be one that's not in the betting. There's quite a few that aren't in the betting now that could easily pop up towards the end of the season.
Yeah, and it's always good to look at someone who's won. Even Wai Yang had won when he beat Tiger in 2009. He'd won earlier that year. Mm. So it does. That seems to be a good strategy.
What's your best bet then? Just before we wrap up here, if you had one bet for the major championships right now, what would it be?
I think I'd go with the Masters because it's the nearest one, and I'd go Ricky Fowler. I'm really confident that he's guaranteed to give you a good run.
I'm going Masters as well. I'm going Charlie Hoffman at 1-2, 5-1 as mine. Just throw a few quid at that each way with six places on offer right now. So hopefully I've enjoyed that. Have you enjoyed it?
Yeah, it's fun, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Crystal balling.
Do tweet us your major championship predictions for this season. Yeah. Anything you think stands out on the William Hill website, do let us know at D Kellner and at Dave Tindall Golf. Thank you for your company, Dave.
Thank you. One final thing, I've just looked at him. Big price. Russell Henley was tied 21st or better in three of the four last year. So he's someone he's won before.
Worth keeping an eye on.
Someone to look at if you want three-figure prices in any of them.
Very good. Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened to this podcast. At D Kellner, at Dave Tindall Golf, if you want to check us out on Twitter. The event this week is the Century Tournament of Champions. Starts on Thursday at 8 p.m. Do get your bets on for that here at William Hill. We will be betting player throughout the entire championship as well. And myself and Dave will be back next week. It's Sony Open, isn't it, next week?
It is, yes.
So we'll get stuck into that.
Is it South Africa as well in the European Tour?
Yeah, I think the European Tour kicks off as well, doesn't it, next week? Thank you, everyone that's tuned in and listened again. And we'll speak next week. Good luck if you're having a bet on the Century Tournament of Champions.
William Hill is committed to responsible gambling. Visit gambleaware.co.uk for more information.